Welcome to Being a Successful Leader with Carl Welty. Carl is a leadership pioneer with years of challenging leadership and consulting experience. Here's Carl with some valuable insights, practical and proven methods for being a successful leader.
Greetings, everybody. Carl Welty here, your host for the ongoing podcast series, Being a Successful Leader. We meet once a week, 15 minutes to a half hour, topics on leadership. The series revolves around my three leadership imperatives. Number one, leadership begins with you. And so my first imperative is being a self-aware and skillful leader. Then you reach out and develop a sound strategy, which is my second imperative. And sound strategy involves the identity of your group, your organization, which is your purpose, why do we exist, and your core values, what do we stand for. And then that's fairly timeless, but use it as your home base, and you launch out from there and set a direction. And direction is all about a translatable, I call it vision, kind of unique to me, vision that's not abstract. You need to be able to have an actionable vision with vision elements. And then from your vision, where are we going? What does it look like when we're there? You then develop a strategic path, a set of strategic initiatives. And then finally, the resultant actions. So that's the second imperative. And the third one then is so you don't lead in a vacuum. And so you need to have an organization of folks that want to rally around this sound strategy that you've architected perhaps with your leadership team. And so you want a culture of commitment, not compliance, culture of commitment. People want to work versus have to work. So those are the three imperatives, being a self-aware and skillful leader, having a sound strategy, and then having a culture of commitment. And so we have a topic of interest that falls under one of those each time. This is the 47th episode, and you can find past podcasts by going to webtalkradio.net, webtalkradio.net, and then click on channels at the top, scroll down to the leadership in the workplace, and then hit on my icon, being a successful leader, and you can see all the past episodes there, and then you can click on those to hear it again or hear it for the first time. Also, another resource, and I like this, that we talk about these things in kind of summary fashion. If you want to dwell into them, you have the past web podcasts, but also I have three books. Each one aligns with one of the three imperatives I just talked about. And you can go to Welty.com, my website, scroll over to Leadership Resources, then go down to Books or click on Books, and you'll see the three books outlined there and how to order them from Barnes & Noble, Amazon, or the publisher, the Ewing's Publishing Company. So again, I like this. We talk about it. You can look at more detail if you want through the book, past podcasts, and then have the books as and the podcast as an ongoing resource. Today, the topic is constructive discipline. Constructive discipline. If you follow the principles and the practices that we discussed in Building Commitment, my book, Building Commitment, you're going to be in really good shape and shouldn't have much problem with people getting out of line. The tenets there, the building blocks are number one is the selection, having a target selection process. So you assure a good fit between the performance requirements of your position or positions and the qualifications and passion, if you will, of individuals are considering. So you go through a target selection process and a targeted interview and come up with the best candidate there. So selection. And then you get to work with clarity, making sure that the new person is and you have shared expectations on the role and ongoing set of results that position is organized to achieve. So clarity is the next. And the third of my building blocks under building commitment is performance coaching. You don't say, okay, I'm here if you need me, but you get involved. You have ongoing conversations about the work. How's it going? And you provide some coaching. And early on, you provide some direction, a lot of how-tos, but you back off of that. as the person matures. So selection, clarity, performance coaching, and then you put it all together in growing teams. So if you follow those practices and principles outlined in the Building Commitment book, you're going to be in good shape. But occasionally there still will be occasion where there's some misconduct or some performance that doesn't come up to snuff, and a person can do it, you know, if they wanted to. So that's where the internal self-discipline is not working, and you need to impose some external discipline to help the person help themselves get back in line. And that's what constructive discipline is all about. And again, 99% of the time, you're not going to need it. People, if you follow the practice we just talked about, are going to be in really performing well for you. But there will be that occasion where the self-discipline is not kicking in and you have to impose external discipline. There are two occasions, as I mentioned already, about constructive discipline. One is misconduct, and the other is not as apparent. And I don't know what any people that talk about this too much besides me, but where a person is not performing up to a minimum acceptable level, and they could do it if they wanted to. In other words, it's not a skill deficiency or an ability deficiency. They could do it if they wanted to. So we'll talk about that as we go along here. Hopefully, if you have occasion or you've had occasion to use constructive discipline, you have some internal or external organizational resources at your disposal. Maybe a human resource department in your organization, or if you're small, you don't have that kind of department maybe yet. And so you have an outside resource of some sort, consulting or attorney, what have you, that can help you. But still, you need to be versed in this as a leader as to when and how to use it. And then hopefully, again, you can avail yourself of maybe some outside counsel or inside counsel, or maybe you're versed enough in it. And maybe today there'll be just a few little reminders and tips for you in using constructive discipline. So what is constructive discipline? Well, we talked about it's, you know, when a person's not self-disciplining, then we need to exert some external discipline to help them help themselves, correct their misconduct, or perform at the minimum acceptable level, and they can do it. So those are two applications again. And it's a series of progressive steps to help the person help themselves, to motivate themselves. There's a caveat I have for you at this point, though, is that don't jump to using constructive discipline. In my experience, sometimes managers, supervisors like to get involved with constructive discipline because there's some steps. It's fairly tangible. There's some letter writing involved, and you're doing things. Well, yeah, but maybe it's not timely, or maybe you haven't fully analyzed just what's going on before you jump to discipline. So analyze first before you jump to discipline. Unless you have a serious safety violation, there are a couple of times when right away, you maybe go right to discharge, which is the final step of the constructive disciplinary process, where serious safety violation occurs. Guys throwing darts off the third floor of the plant, or moral turpitude. You can't afford to have that person around any longer. You know, you're not going to fool around. So there are times you go right to discharge. So those two occasions I just mentioned. One of the things I want to remind you of, again, what's nice about this, you can go back and either read the books or look at the past podcast. My model on analyzing or performance analysts, analyzing performance analysis process, analyzing and resolving performance discrepancies. Very, very solid model that you need to go through a few times when you have a performance discrepancy, a difference between what you'd like to have happen and what is happening. You walk through that a few times, you're going to get the hang of it. And so whenever you have a performance concern where the cause is not obvious, you want to get involved in my performance analysis process laid out in the book, Building Commitment, in the coaching chapter. And there's also an example in there you can follow and use it accordingly. Very, very good process. And out of that, if you arrive at, I have two zones, environmental motivational zone and an ability/skill deficiency zone. And if you get to the environmental motivational zone and you get down to arranging consequences to make performance matter, that's where discipline may fit in. But you need to do the analysis first, unless it's one of those plate violations we just mentioned. With that out of the way, that admonition and the caveat, let's look at the purpose again of constructive discipline. You provide the appropriate environmental motivational consequences to help the person help themselves. This is why the term constructive is used, not just constructive discipline. And as of late, there's another adjective that's been used. It's called positive discipline. So maybe you have positive constructive discipline. I don't know. But the opposite is punitive. So what we're trying to do here, or recommending that you do here, is try to help the person help themselves and not punish them, hurt them, trying to help them help themselves. And again, as I've said already, if they don't avail themselves of the opportunities you afford them as you go through the disciplinary process step by step, you can skip steps too, but normally you go step by step, which we'll talk about in a second, they end up discharging themselves because they haven't taken avail of the opportunities you provided. Okay, the whole constructive discipline process is based on a principle called the just cause principle. Just cause principle. It's a form of industrial jurisprudence, if you will. And there are some steps here, three steps. So you can go back and if this is new to you, you can replay this. Number one step, did the individual or individuals commit the infraction? Do you have the right person or people? Here you have direct evidence, you know, it's been seen. Or you have circumstantial evidence. The facts that point to this individuals, the same set of facts, knock everybody out of contention for this infraction. What rules, regulations, or codes of conduct have been violated here? So number one, do you have the right individual? Do you have the evidence, direct or circumstantial, in what has been violated? Number two, is the individual culpable? Was it intentional? Or just an accidental kind of thing? Did they give it some forethought? And the number three of the three pieces of just cause principle is, does a disciplinary action fit the infraction and the individual? The disciplinary action that you're going to impose here, does it fit the individual and the infraction? The infraction is, how serious is the infraction? What is the usual penalty, so to speak, for this kind of violation? And was it the typical type of disciplinary action for such behavior? What is the typical type for such behavior? Maybe you've got some history there, or you get some counsel on that. So does the disciplinary action fit the infraction? And how about the individual? What's the individual's past performance? Is this the first offense, series of offenses? Is this the continuation of the same kind of behavior, different kind of behavior? And you can lump behaviors together. You don't have to have different paths or trains for the different kinds of disciplinary action. You can lump them together as you work through the steps. Okay, those are the three components of the just cause principle. Do you have the right individual or individuals? Are they capable, or is the person culpable? And does the disciplinary action fit the infraction and the individual? So that's what you need to think through for your just cause principle. Now let's look at the steps. These are universally accepted and applied steps. The first thing you want to do, unless it's a serious violation, is coach, counsel. And again, if you follow the practices and principles recommended in the Building Commitment book, you've already had a lot of good performance coaching. But once in a while, people will fall out of line. So the first step after coach is an oral reprimand. In positive discipline, we're calling this these days oral reminder. And you want to make a note of that and start your file, if you will. And you want to keep notes on all of this. As you talk to folks, you're going to have individual files, perhaps notes, and you talk to this person on this date and what you talked about and so forth. And then performance discrepancy continues, you then want to kind of make a little bit more definitive your notes. So after oral reprimand, you have another infraction. And again, you can skip steps here. And the second of the steps is out of the four steps we're going to talk about is the written reprimand, or in positive discipline, the written reminder. So here are some tips there. Now you've, coach, consul, had an oral reminder, and you documented that, and now you have a written reminder or written reprimand. So some of the things to do in your letter, now that you're going to give this letter to the person, you're tightening down the screws here, get more serious, and hopefully the person kind of wakes up and gets with it. One thing is you want to use your organization letterhead, your letterhead for your company, your organization. It's addressed to the individual. It's a formal letter. The next thing is it's signed by the immediate supervising manager. And if you're that person, you sign it. If you're a manager or leader that you have a first line or the immediate supervisor manager, that person needs to sign it. Because if they don't agree with this and they don't sign it, if it's ever appealed and protested and it's adjudicated and the immediate supervisor manager doesn't go along with things, guess what? You lost the case. Okay, so signed by the immediate supervising manager. Another several tips here. Approval of hierarchy as required or deemed appropriate, whatever your organization authority table dictates here. You may have to get the supervisor manager, may have to get his boss's approval, which is appropriate, but still have that person sign it, supervisor manager. The first sentence, it sounds something like, "This letter constitutes disciplinary action." Right away, boom, we're not fooling around. It's a very direct letter. We're not beating around the bush here. And then the body of the letter, you kind of throw in the kitchen sink. You talked about we've coached and we've counseled and gave an oral reminder on this date, and the performance still continues, or the misperformance still continues. So you throw in the kitchen sink and the dates and that sort of thing in the body of the letter. Then the last sentence should read something like, "Further continuation of the what's ever mentioned above, let's say misbehavior, or not performing up to minimum level, will result in further disciplinary action up to and including discharge." In other words, continuation of the above mentioned will result in further disciplinary action up to including discharge, whatever stage you're at in the process. Because the next stage after the written reprimand or written reminder is the decision making. Leave, or as we say in the constructive discipline, not the positive discipline, is disciplinary suspension. And again, disciplinary suspension is different than disciplinary or layoff. Layoff is a lack of work. So you don't say disciplinary layoff, it's disciplinary suspension. But in positive discipline, we tend to say disciplinary or decision-making leave. And what you typically do, you have another letter now. And if you have the traditional approach of time off or disciplinary suspension, is usually 2 to 5 days. Again, you match it with the typical penalty for this kind of infraction and the person's history. And if it's decision-making leave, you give the person a day or two to think about it. Now, this is quite different here. This is the positive discipline. You actually pay them and you give them the letter and you say, okay, I want you to think about this now. This is very, very serious. And I want you to come back in 2 days and I'm going to have you sign this letter here that you agree that you will perform up to requirements. And if you refuse, then that equates to a discharge. So you're putting the responsibility with the individual there. In both cases, you are. In the constructive discipline, there's a time off without pay, disciplinary suspension, and then with decision-making leave, you put even more of the onus on the person to make up their mind and come back and say they're going to perform or they're not, and then adios. Okay. Again, you can skip steps based upon the performance discrepancy and the history of the person and the seriousness of the infraction. And again, as we said, you can go right to discharge in some cases when you can't afford to keep the individual around. Now, if the person does perform as required, you don't want to continue hold this over a person's head. And so you want to kind of cleanse the record, if you will, the personnel file, the personnel jacket, typically a year, unless it's a serious violation. And then you take it out of the file because, again, you don't want to punish the individual if they if there's another infraction. Yeah, there's been a history here and so forth, but you need to kind of start over here. And maybe you have a you would keep it in the file a lot longer the second or third time. But hopefully that first time is will cure it. Now, every manager, every supervisor, manager, leader needs to have the authority, if you will, for suspension pending investigation, not disciplinary suspension. Suspension means taking off the getting off the property. Suspension pending investigation. And this is where you need to, there's been a violation of some sort, infraction of some sort. Maybe tempers are flaring and maybe there's more than one person involved. You need to get them off the property, out of the office until things cool down and you can have the proper, you or other folks investigate what the heck's going on and what should we do. And that's not a penalty. And so it may be that you pay them for some time off. Hopefully this takes just a short time. And if it turns into a disciplinary suspension, well, then there's already the clock has started. So that's very, very important because that, especially that first line, frontline manager there out in the field or at the office or whatever remote location, they need to know that they can get the person off the property, then talk to you or authorities further up and find out just what they're going to do. Can't afford to have the person linger around or stand around while they make a phone call. Okay, very important. Now, I said there's two causes, occasions to use constructive discipline. One is clear, it's this misconduct. But the other one, again, I don't hear many people talk about that, is failure to perform up to a minimum acceptable level, and it is not an ability or skill deficiency. Remember in my performance analysis model, once you look at causation after you've done your proper job of diagnosing the problem, there's a environmental motivational zone, if you will, and another zone is what I call the ability skill deficiency. So if the person cannot perform as desired and it's a need for skill, then they're training, coaching, that sort of thing. If you go farther and you're sure that they can't do it, it's just been a poor placement, and it's ability deficiency. They don't have it within them to absorb the skill, no matter how good your coaching or training is. Then you got a round peg in a square hole or vice versa. And then the answer there is to demote, transfer, or terminate. So when it's an ability deficiency, you demote, transfer, terminate. But what if it's not an ability deficiency? In other words, a person could do it. In fact, they have done it. Perform up to an acceptable level if they want to. So now you're really into the going from the ability skill over to the environmental motivational zone. And so you have to make performance a matter. And that's where you have the constructive discipline process kick in. And then you just follow it the same way you do as misconduct with the steps we just outlined. Okay. All right. In summary, Friday, you had a comprehensive review, if you will, or maybe a preview, if you're new to this, of what disciplinary action is and how to go about it. The intent was not necessarily to make you an expert in this. Some of you may be there already, but to rather equip you to with the clarity, confidence, and knowledge to proceed on a logical course if and when self-control, self-discipline isn't there and you had to exert some external discipline to make performance matter for the individual, to help them help themselves. All right, so I hope you got a lot out of this. Again, won't have to use it very, very much, but hopefully if you're not already knowledgeable, you're on the way there and you can always replay this or get some help if you need it, it's there. Okay, now next time, the preview of next time, we're going to talk about continuous performance management. Now, what is that? Well, I contrast that with the despised annual performance review, performance appraisal, which is dreaded by both most managers and associates. So we'll take a look at another way of going about this, because knowing how we're doing is important, but maybe there's better ways than this dreaded annual performance review that many of you still contend with, okay? So until next time, you take care of yourself, and we'll see you next week.